It was autumn in the year 1862. The Civil War was in its second year. It was going badly for the Union forces. General Burnside failed at the Battle of Fredericksburg in Virginia and lost 12,000 men. His second attempt at the same place proved ineffective because of bad weather. And so, in a neurotic moment, he issued an order dismissing all of his officers and then asked President Lincoln to approve the order or to accept his resignation. Lincoln had no choice save to accept Burnside's resignation. Burnside was succeeded by General Fighting Joe Hooker. At Chancellorsville, General Robert E. Lee, leader of the Confederate forces, attacked the Union Army and compelled it to fall back. It was a costly Confederate victory. For the Union Army, it was a dismal retreat. General Hooker submitted a second plan to Lincoln. The president would not approve, and he relieved Hooker of command and appointed General Meade. Meade had hoped to force General Lee to battle in Maryland, just south of the Pennsylvania border. But Lee advanced to Gettysburg, and there the armies of North and South clashed under a torrid July sun. On both sides, the losses were ghastly. General Lee withdrew, and the Union forces scored a victory. This was indeed a turning point in the Civil War. Thousands of dead, both the blue and the gray, were given temporary burial where they had fallen. People were disturbed over these temporary burials. The governor of Pennsylvania accepted a suggestion to buy 17 acres and make it a soldiers' national cemetery. The plan was accepted, and then began the reinterment of 3,814 bodies. The dedication of this cemetery, now a much larger shrine, was set for November 19th, 1863. Edward Everett, a very noted classical orator of that day, was engaged to make the principal address. President Lincoln was invited to attend and make some appropriate remarks. At 10 in the morning of that day, the parade started from the village of Gettysburg. The ceremonies began with a prayer, followed by the oration by Edward Everett. It covered 2 hours. By today's standards, it was long and ponderous. There was a hymn, and then President Lincoln. He made a short address. In fact, it contained but 272 words, and it required but 3 minutes to deliver. According to press accounts of that day, the audience was disappointed. So was the cabinet and other officials. Lincoln himself was rather dispirited. Most of the press failed to mention Lincoln's short address. The London Times referred to it as ludicrous and dull and commonplace. But time places things in proper perspective. The two-hour oration of Everett is entombed in old and dusty books, seldom read or referred to. But the address of Lincoln has lived and lived. It has been carved on granite. It has been graven in bronze in all parts of the earth. More important than all this, It has been enshrined in the living, pulsing memorial of the hearts of his countrymen. As Lincoln read from two small sheets of paper, not once did he use the personal pronoun. As history made its appraisal, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was deemed deathless and imperishable, and this was it. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We've come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. The United States of America has always had close connections with the countries of Europe, and the closest of them has been with England, in spite of two wars between England and America. But America has always had another good friend in Europe, the people and the country of France. A Frenchman, Lafayette, helped the Continental Army fight the British in the War of the Revolution. Later, the ideals of the American Revolution were reflected in a revolution against their own king by the French. And as the years went by, Americans and Frenchmen found many things on which they agreed, many things to admire in each other. Then, one day, a French historian, who was a very great admirer of the United States, an historian by the name of Edouard de Laboulaye, suggested that this long period of friendship between America and France be remembered. De Laboulaye suggested that France give the United States some kind of monument. Another Frenchman, Auguste Bartholdi, came to America in June 1871. He took a look at the great harbor of New York City, a big, bustling, busy seaport. And Bartholdi suddenly saw how the idea of a monument could become a reality. Bartholdi pictured a huge statue, a new colossus, standing on that island in New York Harbor, a symbol of America's open door. It would be a statue, a statue of the goddess of liberty, facing out to the open sea and holding a torch, a lamp, a great light that could be seen far out in the ocean to guide and welcome the peoples of the world through America's golden door. The Statue of Liberty is a symbol of the long and deep friendship between the people of France and the people of the United States. But even more, a symbol of freedom itself. In truth, a Statue of Liberty, its blazing light shining out in a dark world. A glowing symbol of the meaning of the words of a poem, which are engraved on a tablet within the pedestal on which the Statue of Liberty stands. The poem was written by Emma Lazarus, titled The New Colossus. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep ancient lands your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. The American adventure is not over. The United States of America is not yet 2 centuries old. Through those years, countless Americans have sacrificed, contributed, built, and labored. Many have died on far-off fields of battle. And even at this hour, they die. Not for some hope of worldly gain, but to keep that freedom which Americans have been working for and dying for through these decades. The legacy which our forebears have given to us is freedom. But to keep it, we must be willing, as President Eisenhower said, to dare all for our country. President Kennedy told us to ask not what our country can do for us, but what we can do for our country. And he reminded us, in your hands, my fellow citizens, more than in mine, will rest the final success or failure of our course. And what can one citizen do? What can one man, one woman, one teenager, one child do? He can keep faith with his past, and he can remind himself each day of that great and glorious legacy which history has left him. And he can pledge himself to be true to that legacy with these words. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.